Hi, I'm Aaron from New Jersey.
I'm Will in Atlanta.
The Sound of Young America is an independent production supported by listeners like me.
If you'd like to support the show like I did, or even better than I did, visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne, live on tape from my house in Los Angeles. It's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International. It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest Hanson's first album was called Middle of Nowhere. It was a cultural phenomenon. It sold 10 million copies, and it spawned a certified mega hit in Mbop. At the time, they were 12, 14, and 17 years old. It's now 13 years later, and all three members of Hanson are grown men married with children of their own. What might be most remarkable about their story is that they never stopped being Hanson. They've spent the last dozen years or so doing what they do best, writing and recording R&B-inflected pop rock records, touring ferociously, and tending to a fan base that's grown up alongside them. Their latest LP, Shout It Out, is the third they've released on their own 3CG Records. Here's the album's first single, Thinking About Something.
While I gave you love, you know it. So when did you ungrow it and decide that you would find another man? You've been out there shaking, terrible boys are chasing. When you get home, you think I'll be the bigger man.
Isaac Taylor, Zach, welcome to The Sound of Young America. It's great to have you.
Thanks
glad
for having
us.
Here.
Thanks.
So, like a lot of people, I had no idea what the up-to-date status of the band Hanson was.
Mm-hmm.
Until maybe 2 years ago, a great friend of this show, Andrew WK, mm-hmm. was on my podcast, Jordan Jesse Go, mm-hmm. and he had just come back from some kind of songwriting fantasy camp.
Yeah.
and we were like, well, what have you been up to lately, Andrew? And he said, oh, I was hanging out with Hanson at their songwriting fantasy camp.
that might not be, that might give people the wrong perspective about what it is, but essentially it is a songwriting camp or something like that, a songwriting retreat.
It does give you a sense, though, of what we have been doing for the last 10 years, that event, because we essentially invite people that we've developed relationships with over the years to spend a week making music and writing together. And Andrew was that. I think that was our third year that we did it. Yeah. So it was we've done it about 6 years now.
Yeah. So every year we bring about 15 to 20 different artists to Oklahoma, where we have several studios set up, and we just spend the week writing songs and making music and hopefully, you know, coming up with great stuff, but also not reserving yourself just to saying we're only going to write hit songs, but really creating the kind of art that inspires people and that just letting yourself experience music in a really honest way.
Well, but in some form or another, Zach, I mean, a good song hopefully is a hit song. I mean, that is kind of the point. I mean, in most cases, what people are responding to is on some level or another quality. And so, you know.
At least we think so.
At least we'd like to think so anyway.
I want to ask you guys a little bit about how you made the transition from kids to adults. You guys had been playing together for a couple years before you signed a major label record deal and sold 10 million copies of an album. When you were teenagers and you were out there on the road, did you ever have times when you thought that this was something that you were going to do as a kid and that you would then go on to do something else in your quote-unquote real life?
Well, the thing you have to step back and realize is, for one, when you start off as a certain age, there's always a certain question in your mind, I guess. But when we began, we would tell people, this is what we will be doing. It didn't even make sense to us when people would ask that question, like, well, so what are you going to do later? It almost seemed like to say what we were doing was a hobby. A good example of this is on the last album, which we put out in 2007, which is 10 years since the first album, major album, was released. We had an interview with a Japanese journalist, and she said, you know, I have to tell you, you know, in her kind of slightly broken English, I have to tell you, I'm surprised, and I want to give you kudos because I asked you 10 years ago what you would be doing in 10 years, and you looked at me and you said, well, what will you be doing in 10 years? Because we'll be doing this. And she said, at the time, I thought you were being a little bit precocious. And she said, I want to congratulate you because I've changed jobs 3 times, but you've never changed jobs. and at the core of who this band is, I think that, you know, the first album was such an extraordinary success. You know, nobody can expect that. We'd made independent records, and yeah, only one of us could drive when we were touring the world. But yeah. We, you know, you can't explain it, but we knew individually when we started that this was what we did and who we are. And along the way, I think the thing about us is just that we always knew that, and we made music for ourselves and have continued to, and luckily have had a really, really healthy fan base that has stuck with us, you know, throughout a long period of time of putting out records, and it's good to be here.
It's one of those things where you have a certain perspective on your life, you know, growing up and doing this, and you kind of wonder sometimes, you know, what other people's perspective was, and especially people like my parents, because I asked them a couple years ago, I said to my mom, you know, what was it like when we were that young? Because I remember very clearly the three of us, particularly Taylor and I at the time, who were even a little bit older, being very, very confident about going forward and doing this. And I asked her, you know, why she responded the way she did and why she was as supportive as she was. And she said, well, I just can't explain it to you except to say that you guys were so clear and resolute and confident in your ability to do it. And you harmonized together so easily, and you were always writing these songs. I guess I couldn't stand in the way in good conscience. You know, she's like, it was just kind of one of those things where, you know, you were obviously kind of driven to do it. And there was a lot of ambition and, you know, and I remember, you know, in my early teen years, which is before we were signed, after we'd made a few, you know, independent records and done, you know, several hundred gigs at that point, I remember very clearly watching The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and going, how do we get on that show? I want to get on that show. And, you know, this is just kind of the way that we thought as young kids and young teenagers.
Well, I think probably what
up.
You mean is you didn't think, wouldn't it be awesome to be on that show? You said, how am I going to get on that
exactly.
show?
Yeah, it was, yeah, exactly.
Maybe the short answer of the question is no, we did not have a backup plan. And we still don't have one.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are the band Hanson. Their new album is called Shout It Out. Let's hear a little bit of Give a Little.
When she walked in with her painted lips, did she tease you for your flirty quips? Did she leave you frozen with the wrong words chosen? You gotta show her why she can't resist. We'll be right back.
It's interesting to me, as I look at the sort of arc of your career, that at no point did you decide to be a new and different thing. I was thinking of some of the pop music that came after you, and I think you guys were very different in some ways from the pop music that came after you. But in some ways, you were the vanguard of this, this movement towards straight ahead pop music that happened in the late 90s and early 2000s. That was a sort of a reaction to the alternative-y everything that characterized the early and mid 90s. But I was thinking of NSYNC, right? And NSYNC, right. NSYNC, I remember, put out this album called No Strings Attached, right? And that was an album that felt almost obligatory. It was the obligatory, like, we're not the people you think we are album.
It was well, they were implying that they weren't puppets, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And you guys, I mean, your second album is, it's like a little bit, you could say it's a little bit broader, a little bit deeper than the first album, and maybe a few less, DJ scratches on it. But basically, it's the same kind of thing. And now, 12 years later, I listened to your album. It's the same kind of thing. It's still, late 60s, early 70s, R&B, pop rock.
Yeah.
Was there ever a moment when you considered the idea of like, man, we're gonna make a really heavy record and blow everybody's mind or something like that?
It's funny because I think we've always felt like we needed to put our music first, and doing that would be not authentic to who we are as people. I mean, we all have very broad ideas about what we can do as musicians, and legitimately, every once in a while, you do write a country song, or you do write
a heavier rock song,
but that's never been the core of who we are, and so I think. What you're talking about is so true. When we first came out, grunge was huge. When you think about what we looked like, especially as young guys then, we were wearing, we had long blonde hair like, Kurt Cobain, and we wore a lot of, plaid and things like that. And then all of a sudden we had this record But
the music that was coming out was our reference, which was us hearing 50s and 60s and 70s soul and rock and roll music.
Yeah, exactly. I think the thing that really was similar about us and the artists like, NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys and, the Spice Girls and things like that was the fact that we both were connecting with this audience that was completely they had no one speaking to them, this young audience of people who are going, I don't like grunge music. Where's my generation's music? And so we, as a collective, that was what was similar, which was that same appeal to a young audience that was saying, give me something that can represent my generation.
Yeah. I think when it's all said and done, we knew what we were and what we wanted to do from the time we were little kids, and I don't think anyone could have persuaded us otherwise. I think, a song like Umbop was not written for us or anything like that. It was something that kind of came from our gut, and we always knew that we had to come from that same place that first record came from, that those records before that major release came from, and that we had to always strive to be as true to our initial inspirations as we could be, and that ultimately that was going to be the thing that provided the longevity for us, and frankly, it would provide the confidence and the lack of, oh man, I should have never done that kind of factor.
If I might add one other thing to the very long series of the answers, don't get us wrong, sticking to your guns as far as who you are and what you do is not necessarily simple, because around you do have the tendency in others to get impatient and sort of say, well, maybe if you guys look like Kiss, or maybe do solo projects. Like things that people generally do when they think that there's some potentially untapped audience, or kind of let's do something totally different. You know, let's get make sure that the X label is still happy with what you're doing. But what we always realized was, you know, nobody cares as much as you do about your career, and we're really proud and confident in what we do. And so, over and over, whether it was leaving our record company on the third album, because we were caught in a merger with a big label that didn't get Hanson, or deciding to, you know, share our experiences in Africa on our last album and talk to our fans about our passion for sort of getting something done with music in a way. We're just really stubborn. we're into what we do and we love it. And we're genuinely fans of all kinds of music. And we feel like our ability to do lots of different things, you know, side projects, producing, writing, which we love doing with others, that still comes out of Hanson sort of being an authentic thing. And that's kind of where we want to come from.
We've got more with Hanson after our break. It's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International.
Production of The Sound of Young America is underwritten in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered online at ask.metafilter.com.
Hello, my name is Graham Clark.
And my name is Dave Shumka.
And we host a podcast together called Stop Podcasting Yourself.
We are two comedians in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, but we're not jerks about it.
Yeah, we're not going to get all weird on you because of it.
Yeah, we're not trying to sell you nothing.
We're not going to try and teach you anything.
We're certainly not going to try and teach you no grammar.
Yeah, but we might teach you how to love again.
Again?
Yeah.
And again.
After your accident.
So we're very charming, and you should listen to our podcast. It's available on iTunes by searching Stop Podcasting Yourself.
Or you can find us at stoppodcastingyourself.com.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Isaac Taylor and Zach Hanson. You may have been following them for the past 15 years, or you may not know that they're still a band, still successful, still touring, and they have a new record out called Shout It Out. Here they are from one of their live records playing Radiohead's Optimistic. Guys went independent for your third big record, and yeah. you actually made a documentary about making that record, and the plan was not initially to make it about why you went independent. The plan was initially to make it about how somebody makes a regular album.
Yeah,
exactly.
Tell me about how you ended up, you know, recording practically 100 songs for that album and going from a major label act to an act that's not only on an independent label, but on its own independent label.
Well, I think it unfortunately is complex, but the short way of saying it is that that we had some conflict of artistic vision with a record label that we inherited post-merger that happened just before our second record, which created some complicated scenarios. So going into our third record, we were trying to work, you know, very very collaboratively was our effort with the newly inherited rap label. And we found ourselves in a situation where we couldn't really come to any particular agreement about, you know, what Hanson should be doing and what the record was that we should be making. And so we kind of knew that going in, but our focus with the documentary was always to show the artistic process. And what's kind of interesting about the film, which is called Strong Enough to Break, is that it starts off very, very music focused, which was pretty much all that we were filming at the time, was us writing, us in the studio recording demos or what ended up being final recordings for certain songs. And then as the film goes on, you start to notice more and more phone calls that are a part of the film. And the reason for that was because we started having more and more phone calls, and they were more and more uncertain and kind of confusing. And when we were sitting here going, you know, we need to start filming some of this because this is starting to feel a little bit like more than just the average making of a record.
What the film ended up showing was exactly that: phone calls in politics, especially in this era of the music business, have really dominated the conversation. And not to be sort of, you know, overly rosy about what art should be. I mean, art and commerce have always had a struggle, but we're sort of the anatomy of a modern band, you know. And the documentary, we felt like in the end, the final end of the story was us being a successful band caught in the largest record company merger at the time in history, which started off as, you know, Polygram and Universal merging, and then surviving that and making the decision to get out of a sort of quagmire of confusion and sort of lack of vision from the label, and to actually start our own label and become sort of the new embodiment of an independent band, which is not an indie rock band. Like, stylistically, it doesn't mean any indie doesn't mean what it used to mean. It means independently, you know, financed or distributed and controlled by the artist. And we, you know, the film showed like the long and painful struggle, which, you know, in this case, we're very glad ended positively, and also didn't kill the music or the band, which it got close to, but it actually, I think, gave us a really it gave us an ability to sort of say to our fans and people, which we shared the film with at film festivals and at 40 colleges across the country. It allowed us to show a side of ourselves which was sort of flawed at some levels, you know, kind of our struggles, but it also showed where our resolve sits. And it's a film that I'm glad is in the archive, but I wouldn't want to live through it again.
You guys, when you went independent, went all the way. You started your own record label. I mean, I think for a lot of musicians, they like the part of being independent where they get to, cut the records that speak to them rather than the records that, you know, a Jimmy Iovine or whoever it is thinks will become a hit. But they're not necessarily crazy about the idea of being responsible for, you know, making sure people come up with new designs for the merchandise or, you know, negotiating things or, you know, booking or any of the various administrative tasks that are involved with being independent.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of music people just want to make music.
Yeah.
Well, and very and very understandable. So,
believe it or not, actually, that's what we want to do too. but yeah, I think what we found was that, fortunately or unfortunately, no one cares more than we do, and there are a lot of things that we really want to be a part of, so that they'll be done the best way and done the way that really represents us. And so it is a really hard balancing act to, like you said, it's like, okay, who's doing the live streaming event right now? Well, I've got to go turn on the camera, or I've got to go do this, or making sure that your licensing deal in Korea is still up to date and things like that. Those can definitely be daunting tasks and things that they're less gratifying. It's not like making music, but you do it all so that you really can make the music and you can do it the way it's supposed to be done.
I think it's easy to probably get maybe too heady about the process we've gone through, but I feel like one of our passions that's developed since we started the label as well is to sort of take the hit a little bit as an independent artist and be the guinea pig, because we are so passionate, not just about making music, but just about being a fan of great music and what it can do. And I think that there is a growing tide and a shift where I think it will happen. There's going to be a core group of artists that will grow up in this new era where, you know, sort of self-propelling and kind of more entrepreneurial attitude towards their band and their project is part of the DNA versus like
largely
one
fueled
day,
by digital distribution.
Yeah, digital distribution and sort of self-promoting, you know, not in a too much of a narcissistic way, but just in a an aware kind of way. And I think what we've done is worked for our band and is an example that's out there now. And we've watched people, you know, guys and girls that are in their early 20s, or teens that maybe were, you know, 2 or 3 years old or, you know, 5 or 6 years old when we first came out, and that say, well, you know, I remember watching you guys when you were 14 or 13 and thinking that's great. And now they've got sort of some example of, okay, well, this is a new world. Music business is changing, and I may not want to start my own label or be able to do this or that, but there's an example out there, and if I've got the guts to grab it by the reins, then it's still possible, and it just means that you have to be your own, you know, dare I say, your own Jimmy Iovine, or your own department, and say, did I get it? Is it good enough? Could it be better? You know, who should I work with? So.
Yeah, and unfortunately, in our band, there's plenty of opinions to go around.
Well, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to be on The Sound of Young America. It was really a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
For having us.
Hanson's brand new album is called Shout It Out. It's in stores now. They're also online at hanson.net. Let's close with a little bit of one more track from their brand new album. This is called Kiss Me When You Come Home. Come on. That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I have been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our music is provided by Dan Wally. The show is edited by Nick White in Chicago. Our intern is Julia Smith. You can email me at Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, at MaximumFun.org. And you can always visit us online to get any of our past shows at MaximumFun.org, or just search for The Sound of Young America to get our shows free in iTunes. We'll talk to you next time right here on The Sound of Young America.